ham doses. Good day, Chairperson, and the honourable members.
I am Giorgio James. I'm the chairperson of this interview panel, and I'm also the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration. You must relax. Don't feel threatened by our presence here. We are not here to threaten you, but of course we are here to ask you questions so that we may, at the end, discover if you are a right candidate. Therefore, feel free, relax. If during the interview you feel like drinking water, you are allowed to do that. You will be asked questions by the panel, which are more practical than theoretical. But in your response, we would appreciate if you balance the theory with practice. Having said that, though, let me be the first one to ask questions to you. But before I do that, can you tell us about yourself? Tell us about your background and experience. And why do you want to be a commissioner for Public Service Commission? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. Good day, honorable members. As I've said, my name, I'm Dizline, I'm known as Mfanozelishozi. I was born in an area in KwaZulu-Natal called Umbumbulu. But due to faction fighting and political violence, we moved to Ndwetwe. I did my primary school at Ndwetwe as well as at Umlazi and Ngonyameni. I also finished my secondary school there. And I'm married, have children. I have a big extended family, the Shozi family. but I studied at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. I did a Bachelor of Arts degree. I also did a postgraduate diploma in Arabic Pacific Education there and a Master's in Community Development. I also have a Business Administration degree from Technical in South Africa. Currently, I am pursuing my PhD on Peace Studies and Conflict resolution. That's the background. But I'm a rural boy. I still stay in Ndwetwe. But I have a house in Durban. Most of the things that I do them in Durban. In terms of the experience, in terms of work, when I finished my first degree, I joined a non-governmental organization called the Adult Basic Education Support Agency. And I worked in an area called Mbangi and Richards Bay. I also moved back to Devon to work for another one, we started a new NGO in 1998, which we looked at public participation issues. And I was responsible for education and public participation, where we're working with the KwaZulu-Natal Parliament. The public participation programs of the KZN Parliament, most of them, we have to set them up. And if you can go there now, you can even see the posters on how we should interact with the communities. We also worked with the National Parliament at the time to assist and work with them in terms of public participation issues, policy development, public participation, Section 75, Section 76, law-making processes, educating KwaZulu-Natal communities around those issues. I also moved from the Center for Public Participation. I worked for the Commission for Gender Equality as an employee, where I was a manager for the KwaZulu-Natal office and the Mpumalanga office, educating the public on gender equality matters, on doing investigations on gender equality issues, educating the public about human rights and transformation. And I left the Gender Commission as an employee. I joined the Department of Correctional Services, where I chaired the first community-based parole boards. We set up the systems there on the parole boards. After 2 years, I was nominated to be a commissioner for the Commission for Gender Equality. The former president, Thabo Mbeki, appointed me as a commissioner in the Commission for Gender Equality in 2007. In 2008, I was nominated by commissioners, and I became the deputy chair of the Commission for Gender Equality. And the 2009, the chairperson resigned, and in terms of the act, I acted as the acting chairperson between 2009 and 2011. After 2012, my contract ended. I was renominated again. I was appointed as a commissioner, and thereafter the then former president, Jacob Zuma, appointed me as the chair for the Gender Commission, which I chaired for a period of four years, 8 months, because that's what my term was. So then after my contract ended, currently I'm still looking for employment, but I'm doing things educating the community in terms of gender equality, policy making, and so on. But I also serve on a number of, even between 1995 to date, I serve on a number of community structures, number of non-governmental organizations. Currently, I'm the chair of a non-governmental organization, KZN County Very Trust, where we look at issues of health and health promotion and so on. I'm also a member of the Community Rural Development Center, which is also a community-based organization where we assist communities to actually bring cases that relate to law and otherwise to assist them with some of those issues. So I applied to be a commissioner because as a chair, I feel that I can contribute on the developmental state, because South Africa is one of those states where we're developing. One, assist the public service to deliver more, because in my work as a commissioner in other departments as well, I've amassed skills of monitoring and evaluation, the skills of oversight, the skills of good governance and financial management. I think if I'm appointed as a commissioner, those are some of the things that I will bring to the fore, and also skills of policy making and policy development as well, and also personal development skills as well. So that's what I think I could bring and become. And also I've learned to work in a team, and also to participate in an environment which is similar to that of the public service, where there are plenaries and how we take decisions in that particular quantum. So for me, I feel that I can be an asset, and I can actually assist our government to do and deliver services better.
Okay. The Public Service Commission has a constitutional mandate to promote the values and principles of Section 195. What is your understanding of the values and principles enshrined in Section 195 of the Constitution? You can mention few or elaborate where you want to elaborate. And then the second question, briefly, what is your understanding on the functions of the Public Service Commission? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Section 195 presents that the public service should promote these values, but some of these values is to make sure that there is high ethical standards for the public administration and public service of South Africa. high ethical standards, meaning then that people who work in government should be free of corruption. We should deal with issues of corruption. We should make sure that the people that we work with do not, they observe high ethical regard for the work that they do. So we must get people who are able to deliver services without wanting to be corrupted by the system or from people from outside. Secondly, the accountability, the public service and others need to be accountable. It's important then that it must be accountable in this manner, that it must be accountable in terms of reporting to communities. Communities must be able to know what government is doing. The plans of government must be transparent. It's one of the values as well, to ensure that in that transparent, make sure that the information that we give to the community is accessible, is also accurate, is not changed. The other one is around the issue of people-centered development, where you must actually develop our country based on the needs of the people. The people, through the integrated development plan, through our national development plan, people must say what they want. And from that, using the policies of government, we must be able to do that. Another value, Chairperson, is a value that we must have highly skilled public service through having very excellent human resource policies that are going to actually have a career development for our own people. So these values, they're not only for the public service, but for the public administration, so that you are able to actually have a developmental state. So, and transparency forms part of this. It's a thread that actually goes around that. The other issue, Chair, is around the view of ensuring then that the resources that we use must be used in a more efficient manner, in a more economical manner. That could be done if we're able to plan as a state, we know what people want, we follow our own financial management policies like the PFMA to actually deliver services. So let me come to the functions of the Public Service Commission. There are twofold. There are so many other functions, but the Constitution presents some and the Public Service Act presents some. But when you look at the Act, you will think that you are reading the regulations of the Constitution. But the function, the Public Service Commission must promote the values that you have asked me to elaborate on. So that promotion should happen, and I know that the Parliament has given the Public Service Commission the task to write evaluation reports in terms of how those values are promoted. We must also, the other function is to investigate, monitor the personal practices of government, whether they are being used in an effective manner that are actually assisting the state to deliver its work. We must also report. One of the functions is to report on its own activities. The Public Service could report here at the National Parliament in terms of the annual report is supposed to happen, but could also report occasionally if there are reports that the Public Service has prepared. But if there is also another issue that they think that should also report on. So that is the other function. The other one is to take effective measures to have personal policies that are going to issue access. So there are other functions that are in the legislation, Chair. One of them is around the issue of inquiries, that the public service could hold inquiries, could summon people to come and appear before it in terms of the work that they do. And we are also doing the similar things that the Commission for Gender Equality, where we're holding government department to account. Another one, Chair, is around the issue of inspection. If they feel that the report that they want and they can use the inspection to actually go and actually find those reports. So, and also the advice, the Public Service Commission will also give advice to government on a number of issues. But could also, in terms of the functions that are in the Constitution as well as in the Public Service Management Act, investigate complaints by staff members of the public service, and they can report those to relevant executive authorities, and some of these reports could also be reported to Parliament. It also has a role to also report on the activities on the non-provincial legislatures on what they do around those issues. So in terms of the Constitution and the Public Service Act, but in terms of accountability on its activities on financial matters and so on, it must be accountable here.
Thank you. Members of the panel will ask you questions and introduce themselves as they ask and put their questions to you. I think I don't remember introducing myself to you. I think I must do that. I did. Okay. Thank you. If I've done, well, thank you very much. Let me give honorable myself.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Shozi. And we much appreciate you giving yourself to come to this committee or to this panel, just to know you better than on paper. My question would be, if we will take this approach, one, I will make a statement, followed by a question. And feel free if it didn't, if you would like me to repeat some points that I would have swallowed away. The Constitution provide for more stronger public service, a more stronger role of Public Service Commission in upholding the principles of public administration. One of the functions is to give direction aimed at ensuring that personal procedures relating to recruitment, transfers, promotions, and dismissals, they comply with the values and principles of the public administration. The question, what can be the best strategy in assisting the Public Service Commission to ensure that government departments appoint competent and dedicated public servants, particularly at the senior management level? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Can you repeat the, sorry Chair, through you, the last part of the question?
I like that.
You remember, I'm still in charge. Thank you for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Chair, I'll just repeat the whole question and I'll try to be slowly as possible. But the question is around the legislative mandate of the Public Service Commission, which is flowing from what the Chair has asked. What can be the best strategy in assisting Public Service Commission to ensure that government departments appoint competent men and women and dedicated men and women within the public service space, particularly in the senior management level? Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you.
One of the important issues in overall SOMA is around of policies. One, we must have a policy that is not ambiguous in terms of the appointment and setting the standards. And also on the position that we want, we must make sure that the job profile speaks directly to the issues that we want to attain in relation to those matters. Then when we appoint, when we advertise, we don't divert from what the job profile, what the policy says. And the strategy for me, Chair, is to ensure that we have a policy that speaks to the promotion of a public service act for the country, and the job profiles for what you want should speak to what exactly we want to get out of there. And the qualifications, Chairperson, must also make sure that the public service must also speak to our own institutions of hardening, so that what we want in terms of realigning their own qualifications with what we want as government. We know that there's a discussion about what the private sector wants, and they discuss these issues. My contribution would be to say, as a country, as a voluntary state, this is what we want, these are kind of people that we want, so have a discussion around that in terms of where are we going in terms of the NDP between now and 2030. So our institutions of hardening giving us the people that we want. The issue as well is around the issue, Chair, around the issue of the strategy as well. When we look for people, we must also make sure that, because the issues of transformation are critical. So do we want people at the entry level? Because we must not also discriminate against the people who have a potential to enter senior management. So our strategy should be to say we must have people who are beginners at the at that particular level, and we must also make sure that we have programs to train those people. But if we don't do that, it will mean then that it's going to be people who are senior that is going to actually discriminate against other people who can actually join in. So the strategy is to say we have a training program that are going to assist people who are going to join the public service. We also have mentors, Chairperson, Lesoma, who are going to assist our own people. Another one is, what about those people who have retired to come and also assist those new senior managers who are also coming in? But we must also, as a strategy, make sure that our strategy also speaks to bringing in other people with disabilities who really want to be a senior manager. So the strategy for me should be based on transformation, should be based on experience, but we must make sure that we don't discriminate against other people. So the technical skills are also critical as well. So the core technical skills are there for us to be able to employ those people. So it will depend, Chairperson, but the strategy should be very, very transformative and developmental.
Thank you, Mr. Shorty. I would ask you around developmental stage, but I will start the way I've also addressed the first question that I've asked you, to make a statement. The National Development Plan, which is an NDP, made an emphasis that South Africa needs to build a state that is capable of playing a developmental and a transformative role. I would like to know, in your own understanding, what are the challenges that hinder public administration in potentially and realizing developmental state as expected by the NDP? Secondly, what sort of public service is required by South Africa to achieve its developmental objectives? The first one is the role, the other one is the objective, the second one. Thank you, Chair.
I'm very sorry, Chair. I didn't get both. I was writing the first one, so I was jumping to the second. Sorry, I'm really sorry. I'm very sorry about this. Don't you check it?
Okay. Yeah, I want to say sorry, right? Not a lighter note. National Development Plan made an emphasis that South Africa needs to build a state that is capable of playing a developmental and transformative role. Then the question, what are the challenges that hinder public administration in potentially realizing its developmental role? Two, which is a question as well, what sort of public service is required by South Africa to achieve its developmental objectives? Are we together now?
Yes.
Thank you so very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. In South Africa, for example, Chair and Honourable Chairman and Honourable Members, the special development in South Africa is skewed because of where we come from in terms of apartheid. And those are some of the challenges. Some of the challenges are that, Chair, when you, for example, when you want to build a road in a community, you need to have more resources to maintain that. Other issues are financial. So in fact, if you have built a road, built a school, you need to have more money to keep on maintaining that. The other challenge is around a financial in terms of realizing a developmental state. And the other challenge, Chair, are also economic, because you need enough taxes for people to pay so that you can be able to develop. The other challenge that hinders a development state is around the issue of education, where you must have people who are skilled so that they can help themselves to develop and contribute to government. The other issue is around, as I mentioned earlier on, around the special development, that in South Africa we have four wells. I live in Durban, but I have a home in Dota, for example. So those are two different, as if once I drive out of Durban, as if I'm in another country. So those are challenges, because in those municipalities, Chair, you need people who are skilled to actually be able to develop Dota, for example, to be on par with Durban. So the challenges around the skills, those are some of the challenges that are actually hindering us from developing quickly. The other issue is the implementation chapters of the policies. So very wonderful policies. I'm happy that the president has introduced now the district model of development. The implementation of policies is also a problem. When I joined the gender commission, one of the things that I did was I said we're not implementing those policies. So it's important for government departments to actually identify areas where they are not performing. It's one of the things that I think if I joined the public service, I would say, where are we not performing as a country, and do a monitoring and evaluation of that, in terms of infrastructure development, strategic infrastructure, and so on. So the issue of implementation of policies is very, very critical, and those are some of the challenges. Sometimes we find that there is money, but because there is not adequate skill set, people cannot implement those policies. What sort of public service want to achieve the demanded objects of this country? We want a public service that is skilled, that is efficient, that is able to deliver on services. Another critical issue is around the issue of integration and partnerships of government departments on delivery of services. So a partnership even with the public, with the private sector. We also need accountability chairperson for our own development. The community should know what is happening. We account to them. We account to parliament. We account to other structures. So governmental state, democratic governmental state, needs to be accountable to its citizens, to its legislature, to its own people, so that they are able to see that the services that are delivered to them are the services that they want. We also need career civil servants, but people, I always say this when I was at the General Commission, we need activists within our own public service. People who are there, yes, to be paid, but who know that I want to deliver a service to my own community. So that's what we need, so that you are able to actually achieve what you call a development of state. So for me, those are the issues. Yes, finances are important. We need to have money, but we also need people to understand that government relies on them to pay taxes so that they can be able to deliver to deliver services. So for me, Chair, those are the issues I think that for us to be able to achieve a capable and a transformative development state, we need to actually do.
Honourable Sibis.
Thank you, Chairperson. We'll also wish to welcome you, Mr. Shozi. I am Honourable Smith, a member of the Portfolio Committee. I will be taking you on good governance. But before I take you, this is a scenario. Effective governance in the public sector encourages better decision-making and the efficient use of resources. So now the question would be, how would you define good governance? That was the first question. And the second question is, what are the five main principles of good governance within the context of a democratic government and efficient public service? Thank you.
Good governance, as the term is, it's a governance that is fair, that is accountable, that is transparent, that does its thing, its own processes for anyone who could come and observe and inspect them. So good governance, government that also follows processes as outlined by policies of the state. It could be PFMA, it could be, in this instance, the Public Service Commission, it could be King 1, 2, and 3, which is one of the principles that you use as part of good governance. So that is good governance for me. The five principles for me around issues of good governance are issues of accountability. As good governance, you must account, you must report. It must be based on the needs of people, what people want to have. It should also be based on integrity and fairness, that for people to deliver on services and so on, there should be integrity and so on. So good governance as well is around the issue of being able to be scrutinized and be transparent about the things that you do. And you must report also accurately, because people could also hide information and sometimes get clean audit. Then they after 15 years, you realize that there was no good governance. So for me, good governance is around those issues. But good governance as well must also be able to be tested in courts. Judiciary becomes part and parcel of that. To say, if I've done this, I know that I can report wherever and I can be held accountable, and this decision will actually hold the test of the day. So for me, those are the principles, Chairperson, of good governance. And the third that runs through that is around the issue of transparency, reporting, and being able to be inspected.
Dr. Schreiber.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, Mr. Shozi. My name is Dr. Leon Schreiber. I'm also a member of this committee under my esteemed chair here on public service and administration. My question relates to the issue of corruption, which obviously dominates a lot of the public conversation. But I'd like for you to maybe zoom in through your chair, to maybe zoom in on this issue of public servants doing business with the state. Now, there's already legislation in place which prohibits this from happening. And yet it does continue to happen. We, as the committee, receive updates on this, and that it does continue to be a problem. So if you take this issue, what would be your approach and opinion on what role the Public Service Commission can play to tackle this issue, to make sure that it is actually eradicated, not only on paper, but also in practice? Thank you, Jeff.
Chair, this is, corruption is one of the very important issues that we must deal with. I know that there's a legislation, but I think at the public service, one of the amendments that needs to be done around the issue of enforcement, ensuring that if you are doing business with the state, or we are found to be, because now you're not only doing it, you will do it indirectly, you will lose your relatives and so on, because you know that could be you could be caught. But I think there must be an amendment around the issue of taking these people to court and arrest them, and maybe have a fine and be arrested if we are doing that. So if that is not done, people are not going to actually, they are always going to find ways of doing this. But again, the other critical issue, Chair, is around educating the public about this provision. Because for that, people will be able to report the people that they know. Because you'll find that maybe people that know about this are people that are in these corridors. So that people know that my wife, I'm working for government, but is also doing business with government. And then so that we can actually hold people accountable. For me, it's around the issue of holding people accountable and ensuring them that not only those who are doing business, but senior managers of those people who are not taking action against them, they must also face consequences. There must also be consensual management around those particular issues. So that I know that if I have a manager, an employee, a subordinate who's doing that, if I don't take action, I'll also be equally guilty in terms of allowing this to happen within the public sector.
Honorable
Gil. No, Chair.
Oh, Summer, sorry.
Let me say it nicely this time around. Consistency case, Chair. I thought members would be happy that I said it.
Yeah, when you want to make a follow-up, indicate so that...
My apologies, I was just eager to pronounce this word. Consistency case, Chair. On a lighter note, a follow-up, Mr. Schultz, because I've been asking this question in all candidates. So I felt that is appropriate that I do. What is your take or your view on vetting of public servants? Because there is this assumption or perception that senior management, they are not so keen to be vetted. It's a perception. Thank you.
When I'm going to work for a public service, it's important that you will be dealing with the monies of ordinary people. These are not your monies. So, Chair, I don't have a problem with public service being vetted. But when we're discussing this as well as a forum, the issues that are coming up around public service, the forum for constitutional bodies. People were talking about issues of rights, that people, when they're being vetted, other people will use this information for their own political ends. So then I don't have a problem with that, but we must tighten the processes around vetting of people so that this information is used for what it's required for. And I think those are the worries. I don't have a problem. I think it's important if people are going to be appointed, work in the state and so on, and you have a clear legislation about how we're going to do this, and there's a clear legislation around some of these things. But I know the unions are going to ask us about what is the intention of this. We must be able to clear about what is it you want to do around these issues. I don't have a problem with that, Chair. But I think it must be done in a fashion that it does not, again, prejudice the civil servants in relation to the way that they do. I don't have a problem, so that people don't use it for other things.
Honorable Gilbert.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kiwi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Shaw.
Afternoon, Honorable Member.
And welcome. I am Miriam Kiwi, a member of the committee and also a member of this panel. My question will be on strengthening oversight. PSC plays an oversight role. Now, I want you to respond to the question as to what, how do you think PSC can strengthen its own oversight and oversight by Parliament? Thank you.
Thank you, Chen. One, we as PSC must identify issues that relate to its own mandate that are troubling the state and the public service. If it's corruption, they must prioritize some of those issues so that we're able to deal with some of those things. Then we have, as a public service, we have the inquiry that you must use. That is, the inquiry part is a mechanism to hold public service accountable. And once you've done an inquiry, you've issued the report, don't just throw the report to the executive authority. You must have follow-up and monitoring mechanism on whether the recommendations that are in the report are effective. I'm sorry, Chair, I must say this. The other petty problem was that the General Commission was Parliament. Because you issue a report, you give it to Parliament, they sit on the report for a year. That kills, because oversight of this institution, the public service, complements the oversight of Parliament. Once you have a report, you know, and you find that you report here, political parties take those reports, we hear them talk about that report on TV. what is critical is those reports, when they come here, Parliament should set up the system on how to process those reports. So strengthening, because again, there's nothing stopping this committee and public service on service delivery level to work together to hold government departments accountable. But knowing very well that we'll also come back and account here. So oversight is critical. So it's twofold for me, as you've mentioned, Honorable Member, that we must hold government departments accountable through the investigation and make sure that we follow up on the recommendations. We report to Parliament on a number of issues. We also ask Parliament to actually follow and hold various government departments accountable in relation to the issues raised in the public service report. So, but oversight becomes very, very critical, because that's how institutions and public service see their work being done. And so that it sees that the report is actually submitted to Parliament are processed. So for me, oversight, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, becomes very, very critical, and is a mechanism that assists to hold a government departments accountable, individual officials.
Thank you so much, Mr. Shozi. My second question would be, and it will start with a background. During the State of Nation Address, President outlined 7 priorities of the 6th Parliament administration. Among is to build capable, ethical, and developmental state, which is what Chapter 10 of the Constitution envisaged. Now my question is, what role should the PSC play in ensuring realization of building capable, ethical, and developmental states. I thank you.
The PSC should use its mandate to actually do that. One of the critical issues is to educate the public about the mandate of the PSC. So that when they are not happy, they can use maybe, for example, the hotline of the PSC. Then we can investigate and bring those departments that are not delivering and issue reports. In that, when we investigate, but I sort of realize when we investigate, those departments are going to actually begin to implement the recommendation. Another one is to do inquiries, as I said, about the service delivery bottleneck and be able to use those so that our country develops. So those inquiries will be around the issue of development, you know, and see where are the bottlenecks, where are the bottlenecks in terms of delivery of services. So the other issue, Chair, is around the PSC of making the issue of oversight, you know. Then you look at the priorities of building a capable state. And then we say, where are the problems around the issue of building a capable state in terms of oversight? We do oversight. We engage the offices of the Premier, for example, and understand their problems in relation to building a capable state. And then make recommendations around those issues where they cannot. And for the PSC, the mandate it has is around the issue of ensuring that we have the skilled personnel that are going to deliver on the capable state. So we must make sure that the promotion, the recruitment of staff members, the transfers and everything that are within the ambit of developing a capable state, including the around the issues of training of staff members of the state. So all that. So that's why the mandate is. I can even the promotion of values for me. You know, issues of accountability, of using the financial finances effectively, development and so on. But the PSC must also work with civil society organizations as well and other partners in ensuring that we have a capable state. But we can only use our own legislation and the mandate to actually deliver on the capable state. So yeah, for me, I think that is critical. But we can also use our own provincial commissioners, 9 of them, to drive the process of ensuring that provinces are able to be on song when it comes to the issues of developing a capable state. But also, we can also have workshops and programs on educating staff members about what is it that you want to see when you say we have a capable state. We can even research around these issues and assist our government to understand exactly what is a capable state. What are the implementation bottlenecks that we have? What are the challenges that we have? So I think it's around the issue of chairperson doing research, using our mandate, public participation issues around some of these matters. Then I think the PSC could contribute in developing a capable state.
Thank you. Honourable Ndufu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Mr. Shozi.
Mm-hmm.
We welcome you to this interview. And we appreciate the passion that you have for the public service to even bother yourself to come for the interview. My question will be based on the compliance and principles around finances and not just finances only, just protocols around finances and assets, let me say so. I'll give you the background. The financial disclosure framework is aimed at preventing conflicts of interest by requiring members of the senior management service to disclose their financial interests. Now the question is, provide an explanation on how the financial disclosure works.
The aim of having financial disclosures is to ensure that you don't work with people and in turn they also appoint their own companies, their own friends, and they run a company. So it's also a good governance measure to ensure that the systems are free from fraudulent activities. I've disclosed in a number of entities that I've worked in. So, Chair, there's no one. But in terms of government, there is a form that you fill that's gonna ask you, your name, the companies that you have, and so on. Some even have a declaration. They call it sometimes a declaration. So all that is intended to ensure that government employees don't do business with the state. So what is important is that you disclose to your supervisor. The supervisor, other organizations, for example, the Commission for Gender Equality, where the committee called Good Governance Committee. That Good Governance Committee set at the beginning of the year, financial year, just look at disclosures of people and advise if ever there were issues. And also advise the president and the commissioners that there was a conflict of interest. So another issue of disclosures is to deal with conflict of interest. And it does not only happen at the beginning. It happens whenever there are meetings, whenever there are projects, because we'll find then that there's a project that's going to be, people want to tender for, maybe your friend or somebody that you know, going to tell you, there are interviews and so on. So that's why each and every organization, the disclosure policy needs to be there to be implemented. But it is a good governance mechanism to make sure that there is no conflict of interest.
Thank you, Chair. Follow-up question. With the background that you've given, what do you think the Public Service Commission can do to eliminate such wrongdoings?
As I said earlier on, one of the issues around the education of the public servant around these matters must never assume that they know. Yesterday I asked one of the very senior officials in Durban, he said, where is the office of the Public Service Commission? Is the chief personal office of a particular department in KZN? He does not know where is the Public Service Commission office. So for me, it's critical that there must be education around those issues. Secondly, there must be legislation and punitive measures that need to be taken so that people will refrain from doing some of these things. And again, monitoring and evaluation, you know, when people have been, because we find them that if you don't monitor, we deal this person in this department, we will find him or her emerging in Northwest or KZN or Western Cape. So they should be making monitoring and evaluation. There should be a system within public service to say this particular individual has been caught doing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like Honorable Mthuli, you know, we you and us, we established the register for violence and related issues in South Africa. So must have that register for some of these people to say they are doing this, you know. Then, so that whenever you appoint this person, you appoint them, you can click in the button of the computer, or you appoint the issues, or you who did not disclose in case of them. This is what has happened. Now we have technology, we're in the fourth industrial revolution, so we can't be able to deal with some of these things. For example, when we have a ticket, we are stopped in case, and I can tell right away that we have a ticket in case of them that you did not pay. So we must also use the fourth industrial revolution technology to deal with some of the issues within the public safety commission. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
The power to appoint in South Africa is assigned by Section 3, Subsection 7 of the Public Service Act. Ministers and or MECs can delegate the power to officials within the department. What are the major obstacles in the recruitment system in the public sector? Is the public sector recruitment system effective in order to ensure professional and capable state? Second question. Okay, I will repeat that question. What are the major obstacles in the recruitment system in the public sector? Is the public sector recruitment system effective in order to ensure professional and capable state? Did you get that one?
Yes.
Okay. Second question. What can be the role of Public Service Commission in eliminating unethical practices in the recruitment system in order to ensure public servants are appointed based on merit?
Eliminating what?
What can be the role of the Public Service Commission in eliminating unethical practices in the recruitment system in order to ensure public servants are appointed based on merit?
One of the things that are so is around, it starts with the obstacles are related to, in most cases, recruitment and shortlisting. Because the public service, we must develop a policy around the issue of advertisement and shortlisting. Because most of the people get lost there. So we must have policies around there to say, you really need to have a transparent process. If ever we're going to shortlist, we're not going to call a TV for 1.1 million people who are being shortlisted. But which other people can come and observe, maybe for senior positions, when we are shortlisting and when we are advertising? Can we observe when people are being appointed? The issue of politics will always come into play here. That sometimes you lose good candidates because of political issues, not from different political parties, maybe even within the same political party. So those are the issues for me. The issues of transparency are critical, that we must look into the issues of how do we make sure that our recruitment policies are transparent. Either as far as shortlisting and advertising. The other critical issue that has come, Chair, you will know that sometimes because there is no policing and monitoring around some of these issues, people even go to the extent of changing the job profile in the advert just because they want a particular person to occupy a particular position. So the issues around that for me are critical. That can actually, because of that, very good people now don't want to wait for the state. It's important for the Public Service Commission to restore that confidence on our young people. You know, we have children now. When they want, what do you want to be? No, I don't want to be a doctor. I just want to be an engineer, and so on. So if we're not careful, in the next 10, 15 years, we'll be losing people. People who don't want to work for the state. It's important for us now to set up the mechanisms to ensure that the appointment are transparent and people must restore that confidence. Yes, must also allow for political appointment at certain levels, you know, maybe the minister's level and so on, but there should be areas where we're saying, here, we want the skills that are going to be able to deliver on some of these issues. Okay, those are the issues. So the other obstacle for me, Chair, you know, apartheid is still alive in South Africa in courts. We find that people in KZN don't want to move to Free State. We must also, as public service, find a way of ensuring that people must also move around provinces. So that Free State province is able to get skills from KZN. So there's still minimal movement. There must also be an incentive for people to move from where they stay. You know, I think it's only Parliament that has almost everyone from everywhere. You know, when you go to Eastern Cape, I can vouch now, 80% of people they come from Eastern Cape. We go to KZN, at least Johannesburg. So we must also have policies that are going to make sure that people are able to move from their own comfort zone and work somewhere else. Companies that do it, you will find that. I'll just make an example. There's SAP in Botswana, Mpumalanga. You find top engineers there. You know why? Because the policies that are able to recruit people from various areas. So I think as government we can do it. Eliminating the ethical conduct. The police people who are collecting interviews as well must also disclose, they must also sign declarations around some of these issues. But again, if people have found to have done this is, you know, we have legislation, it's also fraud. Fraud and activities to actually change the advert and so on. The public service must hold these people accountable, you know. And we must also encourage, for example, if you have applied for a job, you know that you qualify. Talk to people, they must lodge the complaint to the Public Service Commission and we investigate. Not that we want this person to be appointed, but why this person is not shortlisted in the first instance, knowing that he or she qualifies. Being appointed is another matter because we have to go through this process. But shortlisting is another matter. So you must also be able to deal with, and those people must account so that next time when they do that, they know that, hey, this person qualifies, we must actually invite this person for an interview. So we need to strengthen accountability mechanism in the public service to deal with unethical conduct of the people that are actually who are in the recruitment processes. And we must also engage with the NSCs as well. Around some of these matters, so that we agree a uniform agreement about some of these transparencies in doing our business. So I think transparency in the public service is critical. And then because it's utter corruption, you know, even if you appoint people that are close to you, you know that those people are going to listen to you, they are going to actually do what you want them to do and so on, so they're not going to be objective. So what is ASOC critical is, if you don't appoint people who are skilled and so on, they're not going to be able to challenge you professionally on the issues that you want them to do. So that is important, Chairperson.
I want to follow up, Dr. Solis.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. So on the issue of cadre deployment versus merit and that whole discussion, I just want to check where you come down through you, Chair, on this issue. Do you think that the involvement of politicians in appointments, whatever name you want to call it, is something that's ethical and appropriate, or should it be abolished and replaced by a different system where politicians don't have a say in the appointment of officials?
I can't say that politicians should not have a say in the appointment of officials. It happens everywhere. It happens in the states, in the government, country. But as politicians, you need to have people that you know that they are going to deliver on your manifesto. So around the issues of HODs and so on, I feel that politicians should be involved around those issues and so on, and people that are going to work in the offices of politicians. But for a politician to get involved in a deputy director appointment, I feel that I don't think that should happen. But must appoint people that are skilled enough, that are going to be actually amass a team that is going to be able to deliver on their own manifestos and on their own program, but not to get involved in the general assistant appointment issues. But I think that politicians should be involved in other areas, not throughout the entire system.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Shosey, is there any question or comment you want to put to the committee?
Question or comment?
No, Charles. I think for me this was a very interesting interview. I've done more than 4 or 5 interviews. It's very practical, as I've said. So it changes one on the understanding of these issues, and I think that is the comment that I want to actually make. And thank you very much for inviting me for the interview. Just when are you going to finish the process? That's just one comment, and maybe you think that you're going to appoint next year or 2 weeks and so on. That's all, Chair. But thank you very much, honorable members, for very intelligible questions that you put forth.
We intend to finish this very soon, and then the appointment be made within this term. So you will get the results of the interview from the secretariat of the committee through writing. And thank you very much for once again for availing yourself for this interview. And